All right, now, you're listening to the Real Texas Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Bronan, just a fed-up taxpayer, bringing you all of your Texas local and national news. Welcome to the Real Texas Radio Podcast. I am Bronan, your host. Thank you for tuning in once again to the Real Texas Radio Podcast. And we had a lot of good news yesterday. We had some bad news too, but we're going to focus on the good news and the positive, as we always do here on the Real Texas Radio Podcast. And I think the lead story here in Texas, at least from my view, is Prop Q in Austin to jack up property taxes is dead. It was squashed, shot down, smacked down by the voters. 63% of voters said middle fingers up to the Austin City Council and Mayor Kirk Watson and City Manager T.C. Broadnax. They said absolutely hell no. We're sick of paying for your trips to Japan. We're sick of your slush funds. We're sick of the homeless, junkie, bum, criminal, vagrant, mental patient, ne'er-do-well, recidivist, reprobate, unemployed layabouts, and giving them even more of our money. And we're sick of you. And it really warmed my heart to see that vote. And I didn't know how it was going to go. I guess I was kind of leaning toward it was going to pass, but it might be close. So I'm so glad that it wasn't close. And I don't know what the total, what the final numbers are. I'm looking 164,504 votes. One of the accounts in Austin, Jen Robichaud, she's on X, as am I, RTR_Bronan, if you want to follow the Real Texas Radio Podcast on social media. There were 104,148 votes against, over 63% against passing Prop Q to raise property taxes for Austinites. 60,356 were for. So very, very encouraging. And I'm very proud of Austin. Glad that they did the right thing. But I wanted to read to you the mayor. He posted a statement right after the vote came in. And as did Vanessa Fuentes. She's the, I think, deputy mayor pro tem. Terrible. She's the one who just went to Japan. And it seemed like even before it was totally certain, she posts this statement. This was really nasty of her. I'm going to read it to you. "We've heard you, and we understand. We proposed Prop Q to protect essential city services and those who rely on them." Homeless people. That's what Prop Q was for. It was for homeless people. Let's not mince words here, you dope Vanessa. Hopefully you're going to be getting voted out soon, but I'm not that optimistic. "But as the cost of living continues to rise, and as federal budget cuts continue to underfund basic needs like food, housing, and health care, this outcome reflects the hard choices many Austin families are forced to make every single day." Yeah, so, you know, it's getting so expensive to live in Austin that we, the Austin City Council and the mayor and the city manager, decided that we had to jack up your property taxes. And by doing that, that was going to make the cost of living more affordable and cheaper. So this is what she writes. "Finding a new path forward means cutting $110 million from the proposed budget. Do you know that if this were the private sector, and I know, spare me all of the moral high grounding about how the municipal government, it's not just a business and it's about caring and empathy, and give me all of your philosophical remarks about that. But if this were the private sector, if you brought in a serious business person who actually cared about the future of the city. $110 million, cutting that from the budget of Austin would be like shaving pennies. It would be very easy. They could probably do it in an hour. But not so your city council members and your highly paid with a Hollywood contract, T.C. Broadnax, the biggest hack in the state of Texas, who has been a city manager, a deputy city manager, assistant city manager for like 30 years in multiple states, including Florida, including Washington State, and also throughout Texas. Total hack. And he doesn't know how to cut money out of a budget. His go-to is let's jack up the property tax rate. So this is what Vanessa Fuentes, Austin City Council, District 2, and Deputy Mayor Pro Tem, or Mayor Pro Tem, whatever the hell, they love their little titles that nobody remembers. These cuts will have real and serious consequences that could mean fewer, oh, wait for it, paramedics on shift, fewer families receiving rental assistance. I'm not even going to read the rest, but immediately goes toward cutting the paramedics, because if she went down the list of city staff with a title that has four names in it, among which are assistant or deputy or support or aide or coordinator three or coordinator five or whatever, clerk, well, that doesn't really jolt the voter base. That doesn't really get social media clicks and impressions like a word like paramedics. So now you're not going to have paramedics anymore because you voted against jacking up property taxes for homeless, junkie, bum, criminal, vagrant, mental patient, ne'er-do-wells. Sure, Dan. What a dope. What a moron she is. And I do want to shout out praise to the only member of the Austin City Council who is worth anything, and that is Mark Duchin. Apologies if I'm mispronouncing your name, council member, but he tried to stop Prop Q from even going to a vote, from even going to the voters. He tried to stop it at city council, and he's got like 500 followers on X, as opposed to Vanessa Fuentes, who's got over 7,000 on X, who wanted to jack up your property taxes. But Mark Duchin, he is the counselor from District 10, Austin. Well, just listen to some of his comments from back in October about how he thinks that Austin should be approaching its budget.
We're the only big city in Texas doing this kind of tax rate increase. You look at a city like Houston, they actually undertook a very sophisticated process that has wound up saving the city over $120 million. And I think they recognized very wisely that it was more important to go be smart about how you spend what you've got and earn people's trust than reflexively go ask people for money, because that's easier. We've got to go figure out how to build back and earn people's trust.
Yeah, very wise comments. Very wise comments. Let's listen to the mayor of Austin. And I can't play this cut enough. This is the person who wanted more of your tax money in Austin. Does this sound like a sane individual? This is at an Austin City Council meeting back in September. Mayor Kirk Watson.
If Anita Bong is really here, I mean, I haven't seen any bong hits in a long time. If Anita Bong Hit is here, but I haven't seen any of the bong hits in a long time, even though bong hits have long been an iconic part of Austin, Texas, and brought much happiness to our city. In fact, if any of the bong hits are here, it would be a high point in our day for us to get to hear.
That's enough of that. Smoke weed every day. Do you think that that's the kind of person that should be in charge of stewarding any more public dollars than is absolutely necessary? And he put out a statement too, and they all had their statements ready, or a few of them did, immediately conceding defeat on this issue. And all of a sudden now they're going to be good stewards of your money. All of a sudden they're going to be responsible public servants. Servant leaders. All right, I'm going to move things along. I'm not going to talk about the New York mayoral race. And I'm sorry, I don't care that much. It's not my state. I don't live there. I do happen to love New York City. I love visiting. I have great memories there. I'm very sorry to see what's happening to it. But what's happening to it is just on a grander scale of what's happening in Dallas, in Austin, in all of our other cities, allowing homeless, junkie, bum, criminal, vagrant, mental patient, ne'er-do-well, recidivist, reprobates to take over. And it's very sad. California, all of those cities, the same thing. And I don't have any control or really any right to say what can go on in those places, so I'm going to stay out of it. And I'll just say that the voters, they got the mayor that they selected. So congratulations to you all. But I do want to continue the discussion here. I know I've been talking a lot about the Dallas City Hall and its fate, and the Finance Committee, which is basically a subcommittee of the Dallas City Council, which is chaired by Chad West, who also is the ad hoc sports something or other, as ordained by Mayor Eric Johnson of Dallas. And by the way, I haven't really heard any comments from Eric Johnson, the mayor, lately about what he thinks should happen to Dallas City Hall. And maybe we should get some leadership on that, by the way. But the Finance Committee, they met yesterday, November 4th, to continue discussing the pathway for what should happen to the Dallas City Hall. And briefly, again, I know I've been discussing this quite a bit, so if you want to go back, check out my last few episodes on this. I've given you a little bit more context on the discussion. But it was opened in 1978, which wasn't even 50 years ago. It's had problems since day one, mostly with flooding in the underground parking garage, which is now very likely jeopardized the complete structural integrity of the building. And it looks like, from what I can tell, the votes are in from the Dallas City Council. Many of them have spoken on what they want, or they've certainly suggested in their comments what they're leaning toward in terms of what to do. Demolish Dallas City Hall, sell the land to developers, develop the area in conjunction with the brand new convention center that's going to open, allegedly, in 2029 for a cost of, we don't know because they haven't told us, but north of $5 billion, could be a lot more than $5 billion by the time they're done with it. And by the time this convention center is getting ready to open, the current city council, most, if not all of them, they're going to be gone. So it looks like, by my count, and I was watching the meeting, and maybe I should go ahead and just play some of the comments first of what I heard. And I think I'm going to start with Jaime Resendez. He is the council member from District 5. And you know what? He just gives the vibe that he doesn't really care at all. He just seems so checked out. And he's always on his laptop or his cell phone, or he's on Zoom. And he just doesn't really seem to care or be engaged at all. And this is one of his primary concerns about whether or not we should demolish the allegedly historic building designed by architect I.M. Pei, the Chinese architect who's designed other buildings in Dallas. He's also designed the JFK Library in Boston, the John Hancock Building in Boston, which for a long time was the tallest building in New England, and which is actually a very good-looking building, by the way, as are some of the other structures that he's built right here in Dallas. I would question whether Dallas City Hall falls into that category of a good-looking building. I would venture to say, no, it doesn't. I think it's rather a weird building. But this is Jaime Resendez on whether we should stay and keep the Dallas City Hall.
Then I know we have, you know, big picture items in terms of estimated costs, but I do think about one thing that I've always wondered about working in this in this particular space is, do we know what the cost will be to actually have functioning high quality Wi-Fi in this space that we're in right now? Because I've never seen it. I don't know, you know, how that's related to the building itself, but those are a few.
There's no reliable Wi-Fi in Dallas City Hall. Are you kidding me? Can you really be serious? That's just baffling to me. I don't know if that's true. Nobody else jumped up and said that they were getting a strong Wi-Fi signal to challenge Jaime Resendez's comments. But anyway, that's new information to me. So it looks to me, though, that among Resendez, so he's the first one. He's pretty clear in the let's leave this building, I don't care about it camp. Zarin Gracie, he's in the let's leave camp, I would say. Kathy Stewart, she's in the let's leave camp. Gay Janelle Willis, one of the developers' favorite council members, Gay Janelle Willis of Preston Hollow, she's in the leave camp. And I was kind of surprised. I thought that Jesse Moreno, Councilman District 2, Deputy or Mayor Pro Tem, I thought he was in the maybe camp. When I started watching the Finance Committee meeting, I started just doing a little count to see if I could figure out where everybody stood. So, you know, there are 15 council positions, including the mayor. So 14 council positions plus the mayor. He's really just like the 15th vote. And I figured, I was like, you know, there's probably five. It sounds like there's five in the let's demolish City Hall camp. And as I kept watching the meeting, I'm like, oh, wait, no, there's seven. And then I went, oh, and I have two opposed, only two that are clear opposition, Mendelson and Paul Ridley. They're in the don't demolish City Hall camp. I think that's quite evident. They held the meeting for public comment earlier this week as to what to do about Dallas City Hall's fate, and all of the old white people in Dallas, or many of them, hundreds of them showed up to who don't care about basketball, go figure. They firmly are in the camp of we got to save City Hall. But as I was there, I'm looking around like this isn't representative of reality. It's not. What's representative of reality is this finance committee. And I got up to nine counselors. I'm up to nine. Let me just go ahead and name them. I know I named a few. Some of them haven't spoken publicly, but just based on the type of people they are and seeing how they vote and seeing their public record, I think I know how they're going to vote. So I am predicting that they've got nine votes already to demolish City Hall and lease. They want to lease office space. And I think they might be eyeing the redeveloped Bank of America building, you know, the green building, or when the skyline is all lit up, it's got the green rectangular lighting around it. It's a very good looking building downtown. It's about to be redeveloped, office space, hotel rooms, and it's going to get a new lobby. I think there may be residences as well. And I think that Chad West, the councilman District 1, who thinks he's going to be mayor, I think he'd like to move into that building and get a nice corner office in the Bank of America Tower. And he's going to get all of the City Hall cabal cronies to help him. And he's going to get the crows to help him. He's one of their favorite city councilors, him and Gay Danelle Willis. But they're all in the pocket, maybe to some degree. Maybe not Kara Mendelson, maybe not Paul Ridley. But the crows, they did donate in this last cycle $50,000. To this Dallas City Council out of a total of a little bit over $400,000 raised by all of them. So just to let you know. So here are the nine names. I'm going to give them to you. These are the nine who I predict right now, if there was a vote held, that they would vote to vacate Dallas City Hall and rent office space downtown. Resendez, Stewart, Moreno, Gracie, Willis, Basildua, Cadena, West, and Maxie Johnson. Nine votes, and you only need eight for a majority. And like I said, other than those two, Mendelson and Paul Ridley, who are firmly in the no camp, and they will probably remain that way, everybody else is a maybe. And I have a feeling that weak sister, Laurie Blair, she would easily be a 10th vote. I would say easily. Bill Roth, he's a maybe. He's a pragmatic guy. He largely self-funded his campaign for city council. I have a lot of respect for him. I have a lot of respect based on that. He put up over $100,000 of his own personal money to run for city council. And I think he's a wise guy, and I think he actually cares about Dallas. I think he's very intelligent when it comes to budget. I don't know. And, you know, I'm in the position that if your downtown sucks, then you're in trouble. Then your city sucks. If your downtown sucks, then your city sucks. And I'm sorry, the Dallas City Hall building, it isn't doing it for me. And I know it's got a nice view, and okay, the reflection pool, it's nice, but that whole area is underutilized. It just is. And if we're going to lose what is one of the biggest economic engines of this city, which is all of the revenue generated by the American Airlines Center, which is largely generated by the Dallas Mavericks and the Dallas Stars and all of the concerts that circulate through that venue, 260 nights per year, that venue is hosting events. And if we just lose that over this building, which is not very old, it is not the Alamo, it is not Notre Dame, it's not Paul Revere's house that's 400 years old or whatever, 300 years old. It's not a marvel. It's not even the, what is it, the Los Angeles City Hall, which even though is not very old, but older than Dallas City Hall. I think that's a better looking building or some of the other buildings in California, but not this building. I just disagree. And you know what, just to give you another sense of where this council stands, it was my understanding that one way or the other, a structural integrity assessment was going to be conducted by the city staff, and it was going to be so ordered by the Dallas City Council. I thought they were at least planning firmly to do that, even though it's going to cost millions of dollars and probably take months. But hire an engineer to assess the entire building and present a scope of work and cost estimates for how much it would actually be to salvage this building. Find out how many hundreds of millions of dollars. But this finance committee revealed it doesn't even sound like that was a priority at all. It's an afterthought. And Bill Roth, councilman from District 11, he had to go ahead and ask and just see if that was actually in the plan. I'm going to go ahead and play for you the exchange here. Bill Roth confirming with his colleague, Chad West.
If it's appropriate, that maybe some direction be given to the staff to investigate procuring some estimates or bids for a structural engineering consultant so that as part of the overall planning to do that. And it may, maybe it's already sort of imputed in Section D, but it might be something to clarify to allow them to actually get us some estimates and time frames on what that work would be done.
Yeah, I think that's a good question for staff. Like, what to what extent does item 1D give you guidance on procuring third-party help?
Gotcha. We're at a little bit of a deficit on the timeline related to being able to do some of those things. We would have to be able to do some due diligence first to see, depending on exactly what type of analysis that we were going to be doing, and then how we could contract it and make sure that we met your February timeline. So I don't know that I can commit to...
All right, that's enough of that. Sorry, I know that's a little boring. Sorry, it's municipal government, city government. It's maybe it's not very exciting to you, but they weren't even really planning to do the structural integrity assessment. And they want all of this to be happening behind closed doors. They don't want the public to be providing input at all. They want to rush this. They want it to happen so fast. getting out of City Hall, moving into office space, selling it on. And they don't want to explain why. They don't want to explain the real reason why. Because I know what they're saying publicly, many of them, that, oh, the cost of the building, the cost to salvage, the cost to renovate, the cost to repair, the inconvenience of having to find temporary space for staff. And I don't think that's the real reason at all. I don't think they're being honest about it. And I just don't know why we need to have these secrets about this decision as a city government. I fail to see why everything needs to be a big secret. And there have been a lot of editorials and opinion pieces in the Dallas Morning News expressing different opinions on what should actually be the fate of Dallas City Hall. And I want to read to you one that was written by Sean Todd, who is a developer, but he's a thoughtful developer, and he's actually associated with not only salvaging, but restoring to glory some historic properties right here in Dallas. Probably the post office, which is now Residences Downtown. That's probably the most notable project that this Sean Todd is associated with and his firm. And this is the title of his opinion piece: Dallas Developer, Tear Down City Hall. Recently, our city hall has been the center of an important discussion. Our council members are diligently trying to decide its fate. Yeah, right. Diligently trying to decide its fate. The fate's decided. There's 9 votes. They've got 9 votes by my count. While there's an argument of its beauty, historical meaning, and preservation, the reality is that this building is riddled with multiple occupancy issues. If City Hall were vacant today, there would be absolutely zero interest from any firm or corporation to occupy the building. Well, that's clear. We know they want to demolish it. We know there's no interest in occupying it. For the same reasons, hundreds of corporations have left downtown for uptown, the marketplace today demands a much different type of building. Not worth restoring. Our firm is one of the largest historical preservation developers in the nation. In Dallas alone, we've preserved and adaptively repurposed 2 office towers designed by the renowned architect I.M. Pei, who designed Dallas City Hall. We've restored more than 24 turn-of-the-century jewel box buildings in the East Quarter, the Tower Petroleum Building, the historic downtown U.S. Post Office and Courthouse, and the First National Bank Tower, which was the largest historic project in Texas history, with a restoration cost of over $450 million. No one has developed more in downtown Dallas in the last 10 years than our firm. And yet, if City Hall and the land it sits on became available, we would not pursue it. City Hall's design presents so many challenges to functionality, it's hard to list them all. Since my first day of visiting in 1985, the parking garage has continued to leak and now floods. There is zero sense of arrival. Where is the main entry? The building doesn't reflect the character of a welcoming city, nor one where we take pride in our common areas. The floor plates are enormous. The center atrium that divides each floor obstructs internal flow and access, not to mention creates a tremendous cost in heating and cooling. And by the way, one of the speakers who was at the town hall discussion hosted by Paul Ridley and Kara Mendelson about the fate of Dallas City Hall Monday night pointed out what a climate change catastrophe it would be if we demolished the structure. Oh, well, how much does it cost to heat and cool that building? I have no clue. I couldn't even venture a guess, but I'm sure it's an astounding cost. I'm sure it's absolutely astounding. The elevator banks are not centralized, creating confusion, so much so that color coding the elevator banks in long hallway stripes have been the solution to find the appropriate elevator. The second floor, which is accessed by an escalator, is no longer activated, and the first floor has struggled for years as to utilization. The exterior plaza, which Pei stated would generate economic activity, well, that never happened. I don't know about that. I mean, there's definitely a few bums who sit on the concrete benches and smoke dope out front. You know, if that's economic activity. I know that's the kind of economic activity Adam Basildua likes to see in Dallas and downtown. These limitations make Dallas City Hall virtually unusable. In the private sector, builders and tenants focus on the needs of employees and other uses of a building, creating inviting work environments and aesthetically pleasing places for their clients. The current standards are efficient floor plates, abundance of immediately accessible parking, a tremendous amount of amenity space for occupants, and an appealing exterior architectural aesthetic and design. Efficiency in design leads to less operational and mechanical costs. Our city hall provides none of these benefits or ambiance. And I'm going to go ahead. I'm not going to read the whole rest of the article, but it's the Dallas Morning News. And, you know, maybe I want to play another cut here. This is Chad West. Again, he chairs the finance committee, and he wants to get the hell out of Dallas City Hall faster than anybody. And this is how he ended the discussion of the structure's fate yesterday.
I think we owe a fiscal duty to our residents to know all of our options and get them all on the table. And then I'll end on this. The way I read this is it doesn't make a decision, as Councilwoman Willis had mentioned earlier, and we're not talking about demolition. We're not talking about constructing a new building. This is getting all of our options on the table so that we are able to make the most prudent decision.
Yeah, maybe you're not talking about demolition or buying new land to build a new city hall. We know you're talking about getting out of City Hall, selling it on, let somebody else worry about the demolition, and you get your fancy corner office in a tower, in an office tower downtown. And so, you know, you don't need to play games. We know exactly what you're doing here, Chad West.
You knew it, I knew it, and everybody knew it, but you guys didn't want to write it because you're fake news.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And again, there are 9 votes by my count. There are 9 city councilors right now who are prepared to get the hell out of Dallas City Hall, sell it, demolish it, they don't care. And without even commissioning the structural integrity assessment, which maybe that's not even necessary. You don't think it's going to be $100 million to fix that building? Probably triple. Whatever they say it is, it's triple anyway, because these people, they have no idea what the hell they're doing when it comes to budgeting, when it comes to construction. And then they've got the misfortune of having to discuss budget in public, which developers, their eyes and ears are peeled. They're listening to all those numbers. The developer says, "Will you tell us how much you got and we'll tell you the price?" That's not how it works when you're in private business. All right, I'm going to wrap it up there. And I know I didn't even get into all of the ballot amendments, the constitutional amendments here in Texas, but they all passed. They all passed. I voted against, I think, 6 of them. And sorry, I didn't vote for the state of Texas to establish dementia research funding. I don't think that's my responsibility as a taxpayer. Sorry, I didn't vote to establish a water fund. I thought I was already doing that by paying my water bill on time every single month. I thought that by paying my water bill, my utilities, meant that I was supporting safe and reliable water. I didn't know I had to go out and get a constitutional amendment to fortify that utility as well. Sorry about that. And looking forward to my fake property tax relief, as I've already been notified that all of my insurance premiums are going up that are going to negate any kind of property tax relief that allegedly the state of Texas, Greg Abbott and Dan Patrick, Lieutenant Governor, they're so proud of themselves for getting into the hands of voters, of Texans. And sorry, I went negative. We had positive news to begin with Prop Q. That was great, but it was really just a beginning. We've got to eliminate or get we've got to get a real grip on property tax relief here in Texas. All right, I am Bronan. Thank you for tuning in once again to the Real Texas Radio Podcast. Keep tuning in, keep listening, and I will catch you on the next episode.